This is Tony Todd, and you're going to be listening to the Girls Will Be Ghouls podcast. Stay tuned.
There was an atmosphere. We were living it, and we were in that August, Texas heat.
Welcome to Girls Will Be Ghouls. This is episode 13. I'm Zena Dixon, realqueenofhorror.com, and I'm here with Ashley Blackwell of graveyardshipsisters.com.
Hey.
Today, we have some awesome things lined up. First, we're going to talk about the horror Oscars. After that, we're going to have a movie discussion on The Witch. But before we get into that,
we've had a lot going on over the past couple of weeks, including your awesome video vlogs of Pride, Prejudice, and Zombies, which I think we covered last time we spoke, but also some two new great funny ones, informative, interesting, entertaining. You did a movie review of The Witch and Ratter that are available on YouTube. I don't know if you want to talk about that, or because I think everyone should watch them. So
sure, you know, when it comes to movie reviews, I always like to add a little twist in there.
And just let everyone know who the handsome gentleman in the video is with you that helps you bring it to life so nicely.
Oh, yep, yeah, that's my husband, Rico. We've been doing this for years. I started doing reviews back in like 2010. And he's always been a part of it somehow, some way, rather if he's playing the character Charles or just being that random person in the video.
And what do you have lined up as far as any new ones?
As far as any new ones go, I'm thinking about, I actually was supposed to review 10 Cloverfield Lane. But I did have some problems this past weekend, so you can look out for that one. And I'm thinking about doing an older movie review. I'm not too sure if it's going to be an Italian horror or if it's just going to be like a classic.
You mentioned something about having a weekend of Italian horror films. Anything you want to share right now, or you want to keep it kind of secret?
No, not at all. Just sometimes, you know, I get an urge to, you know, watch certain movies. I recently picked up the movie The Beyond, as well as House by the Cemetery, and those are two of my favorites. So I decided that it would be pretty cool if I just made a weekend of it. I'm in the process trying to find a copy of Nightmare City, which is really another awesome movie, so. But we'll see about that, though. I mean, it's not secretive. It's nothing crazy. It's just, you know, sometimes when you just need to sit back sometimes and just watch movies.
Right. I was going to ask about Nightmare City. Is that hard to find, or just haven't bought it yet?
I don't think it's hard to find. It used to be on Netflix. I don't think it's on there anymore. I haven't checked Hulu or Amazon yet.
Okay, good. I wasn't sure about that one. I know, as far as I'm concerned, I just recently posted my Black Woman in Italian Horror article. Mm-hmm. So I've been thinking about it a lot too, because there's quite a few that I haven't seen yet, and because it has that giallo title,
right.
The Case of the Bloody Iris, like, I really want to see that one. And I read the synopsis, it looks good. I'm seriously considering renting that one probably this weekend, because it is on Amazon for rent, and you can also buy the DVD. I might wait for the Blu-ray release of that, and so, but if I like it, so, but I do want to rent it first and try it out, so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think we both have Italian horror on the brain. That's interesting.
Yeah. I haven't made out the list yet of what I... Because I've seen, you know, Nightmare City. I've seen House by the Cemetery and The Beyond. But there are a couple on the list that I've never seen before. It's just all about finding a copy, you know?
Yeah, I know most of them are pretty easy to find, especially in our day and age. Some of them aren't, but...
Right.
Yeah, and some of them are on YouTube. Tenebrae is on YouTube. Probably some other ones. I know Demons definitely is.
Yes.
So.
I was actually thinking about checking out Kill Baby Kill, as well as Blood and Black Lace. Because I've always liked I don't know what it is. I have a thing for like the cartoon covers for horror movies. I think it just makes it look interesting. And Deep Red. I've never seen that.
One.
Yeah, I've never seen that one before. I hear mixed things about it. You know, there are people who are just so in love with it, and then there's people who absolutely hate it. But I guess we'll see how that goes.
I liked it. I think it's on Netflix.
Okay. So.
Or if it's, it might not be on Netflix anymore, but it was for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll take a look.
Also, I just wanted to mention that Graveyard Shift Sisters is nominated for a Rondo Award. Rondo Awards are awarded to, you know, I guess, relatively the best in horror. So we are nominated for Best Website or Blog of 2015. The deadline is April 10th. 2016 at midnight. So if you can just, all you gotta do is email the guy who's putting it together and give him your vote. If it's for me, great. Also, you can vote for other people in the horror community for best. I think one of them is best magazine cover. All types of random categories that if you think, or even Best Film Festival, that's another good one. So if you are interested, please vote for me if you would want to, and also vote for everybody else, who all your other horror favorites from last year. So absolutely. Yeah, so I'm excited. So
I'm
hopefully
excited for you. I voted for you, FYI.
Well, thank you. At least I can say that the blog is award nominated. That's good enough for me. So.
Yes.
But I do want to win. But yeah.
Something else I wanted to talk about, though, Monster Mania.
Yeah, you surprised me.
Yes. So, so those of you who don't know, Monster Mania, it took place from March 11th to the 13th in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And I only attended on Saturday. You attended for, was it the full 3 days?
It was just Friday and Saturday.
Okay. So how was your experience? Who did you meet?
It was good. I always have fun. I met a friend of mine. Her mom came and hung out with us. So that was really fun. I had a really good time. It just, I always have a good time when I go there. It's really, it's the rush of adrenaline of spending way too much money, but you're buying things that you, one, know you can't get anywhere, else, or you cannot get just anywhere. So that was awesome. To always get, you know, cool, neat stuff and, you know, just, going to panels. I would be remiss if I didn't say that I was disappointed with myself for not going to the full Walking Dead panel. I am a Walking Dead fan. So even, you know, what's great about these conventions is that, and I've been to one full Walking Dead panel a few years ago, but the greatest thing about them is it doesn't matter, like, even if they have, like, the lame Walking Dead cast members there, the ones that you're not excited about meeting, if you still... Even the last 10 minutes when I was in the panel, even if you still go to one and you're a fan of the show, I think what makes it so lively and entertaining is the crowd that you're with, because, you know, they're laughing along with you and they're making, like, jokes, inside jokes that only Walking Dead fans would understand. So that's what I really, really love about going to panels. And also Tony Todd's panel was probably my highlight. I got to Periscope that. So if you are interested in seeing the video, or kind of just hearing him talk about his career and, you know, the art of acting and just being really inspirational and really engaging, it is on the Graveyard Shift Sisters Facebook page if you want to check that out. So, yeah, I mean, and of course meeting you was the biggest highlight because you surprised the hell out of me. So, yeah.
So, wait, I want to go back to your purchases. So, what did you buy?
Oh, yeah. Okay, so the best purchase I bought... was I bought a girl handbag. Like, okay, so I said this before. I'm going to say it again. I'm a tomboy. I'm a feminine one, but I'm a tomboy, more or less. So I don't wear, like, heels. I don't, you know, I always wear jeans. So it was really cool to find something that was really definitive of, like, my personality, not just as a horror fan, but also just as a woman, as a person. You know, I bought this really cool Bride of Frankenstein handbag. And I was just like, yes, I have to have it. And I bought it, and I carried it around like a girl. I know that sounds silly, but you have to understand, just being 30-plus years and just kind of always being kind of, you know, growing up with nothing but brothers and being, you know, rough and just doing those things, it's really cool to kind of have something that really feels definitively feminine. So I like the balance, and it's cool, and I love the bag because it says a lot about me as a horror fan, too, like I said. So I love it.
Have you received compliments yet?
Yes, I think, did you compliment it? I don't remember, but yes. Yeah, my friend today just said something. She was really shocked because you don't see things like this every day. Like, you have, this is the kind of stuff you either have to go to a convention to buy, or, you know, maybe you'll get lucky and find it at one of those Hot Topics in your, like, local mall or something. But really, you can only get stuff like that online, you know, like, if you're really looking for it, if you're a fan in that sense. So that was really cool to buy. Okay. I forget. I don't even know if I answered your question. I totally went off on a tangent.
What about your purse? It is a really cute purse, so you picked out a really awesome one.
What did you get? Did you buy anything while you were there?
I bought movies. One of the first movies that I bought was Intruders the Slasher. And I also bought Tourist Trap. Which is one of my favorites, and Trolls. Just the first one. You know, I appreciate the second one with that oh my god and that fly. I personally prefer the first one. I just remember as a kid I used to watch it back to back because it was that awesome. Also, Lloyd Kaufman's book, Make Your Own Damn Movie. And he also autographed it with a, you know, Traumaville, which I absolutely love. I started reading it. Some great tips, straight to the point. With that I Heart Traumaville High School sticker.
What does the sticker say?
It says, Xena is a goddess on it, which I adore. Just the thing is, you know, some people, you'll see them, they'll put, like, stickers on their laptops. And, you know, I'm not that girl. Because someone asked me that. They said, are you going to paste it on, like, just put it on there? And it's like, I don't see myself doing that. I like to keep it clean, you know, because, you know.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was gonna say it's an autograph sticker, so I wouldn't put that on my laptop, and I litter my laptop with stickers. So
I don't know. Like, when I had my older Mac, it was just like the white one. It was an older one from like 2007 or 2009, you know. But I remember I bought a whole bunch of stickers for that one. Like, I had this really awesome sticker. Still have it to this day, where it's Snow White. But she has a brain in her hand and she's all dead and she's eating it. And I bought it just for that, but I couldn't do it, you know? And then I know it's just a sticker, but it's just so permanent. And I just don't know if I could commit myself to that, you know? And I know who thinks about that stuff, but I do apparently.
No, you can put it on display at work and be a show off like I do.
You're right. But that's pretty much, you know, what I purchased. I wanted to purchase more. Originally, when I went to the Trauma table, which that one was my favorite, I wanted to buy the movie Girl School Screamers. It's a very cheesy movie, but I adore it so much. I think it's just wonderful. But I couldn't find it, and I remember seeing prices for it. It was a little bit higher than I wanted. Like, I think I found a copy. It was $75, but I recently found one. Yes, I recently found one that's $22, and I think I'm going to do it. I think I'm just going to buy it because I really want it, and I'm in the process right now of building up my movie collection. I think I told you this before. My mom's movie collection is amazing, and I actually helped her build that collection, even though she's the one who paid for it. I'm the one who picked it out. You know, I remember when I was living in New York, on a weekly basis, you know, we used to go to Best Buy or go to different video stores and just, well, when they were around, and just get DVDs, you know. Sometimes we would do, majority of the time we did a lot of blind buys. And I think that's how I was able to check out a lot of movies. One example I remember, I wanted to see the movie, like, Suspiria when I was in high school so bad. And they didn't really have, like, just, like, that one disc. They had the special version where it was thick, and it was, like, $50. But I wanted it so bad, and bless her heart, she got it for me. She hated the movie. I don't think she cared for it. But I absolutely loved it, and I would recommend it to friends who liked horror movies. They didn't really like it, but that's their loss, you know. Point is, of that little story, I'm in the process of building up a collection because I wasn't one to do that. Just every once in a while, if I found a movie that I liked, I just have, you know, held on to that. I knew going to Monster Mania that I wanted to grab movies that I loved or grab some blind buys.
So I'm surprised that if that's a trauma movie, I'm surprised it wasn't on their table.
It wasn't. I asked the guy. He said that it's out of print. It's very rare.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, which was, it was disappointing, but I guess I can understand. Who was your favorite person that you met at Monster Mania, besides for me?
It is you, because honestly, everyone I met, like I've met before, and I'm friends with, and we always make plans to go twice a year. And I met Heather Langenkamp, but I met her for the first time before back, this was maybe 3 or 4 years ago now. I met her in Hunt Valley, Maryland, and I met her at that Monster Mania. But Tony Todd, I was finally able to get in his line, because he's been at Monster Mania before, but I finally got in his line. And, you know, he's pretty active on Twitter. Like, he is... Because, I mean, even at his panel, it was really funny. Like, he was tweeting, he took a picture. He was like, I'm going to put this on Twitter. Hold on. And that was pretty cool. And I just told him who I was on Twitter, and he knew my Twitter handle. So I thought that was pretty neat. And
it's really awesome.
Very nice guy. Very personable. I was really happy. So
that's awesome.
So that was a good meet and greet.
Yes. I met him as well, and he was really nice as well. I also met Lloyd Kaufman, which I love Troma so much.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a really big, big deal for me.
Yeah, and I saw Lloyd's tweet to you about being at his next movie. So
yes.
And he's serious about that. Like
I know
he's serious, right? He's like, I'll be in your movie.
Yes.
So let's go through this, because I am so jealous that you got to see A Night on Elm Street 4 at the New York City Draft House.
Yes, I almost forgot about that. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
Oh, God. So jealous.
Yes. So also, when I was up there, my sister, she surprised me. She just told me how we're going to go see a movie. And I thought we were going to see, you know, 10 Cloverfield Lane, which I was excited to see that. But we went to the Alamo Draft House, and I've never been there before. That has to be the best movie theater I've ever been to in my life. Like, literally, it has like such an kind of like an old school feel to it, like vintage. So we went to go see it, and you had to like buy your tickets in advance. They had props from the movie. It was an awesome experience, because it wasn't like your typical movie theater, you know, and it was on a Saturday night. So, you know, usually there's like teenagers like everywhere screaming, yelling at stuff that's not, you know, scary or on their smelly little phones. The rules of the movie theater is if you talk, you know, abruptly talk where it's like you're ruining for everybody else, you get kicked out. If you use your cell phone, even if you just look at your cell phone, you get kicked out. So that wasn't even a problem, you know? And then on top of that, everybody in the movie theater, it was just like an awesome experience, because you could tell that people who were there, they've seen that movie hundreds of times, because people could quote along with it. They were singing the songs. And, you know, I really love that Anything song. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Yes. Why? Anyway, I'm saying why, because sometimes I just wish that I was like born in the 70s so I could have like partied in the 80s. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. It's funny that you say that. When I did go to Monster Mania in Maryland, someone has the vinyl copy of the Nightmare 4 soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at him. I think he's waiting in line with Heather too. And I was done. And I was like, "Where'd you get that?" And he was just like, "I got it online, but like, I hear it's out of print. Like, I didn't get it here." And I was disappointed. But you know, I love that soundtrack as well. So I do know you can listen to it on YouTube. So sometimes when I'm at work, because I do a lot of data entry, I'll just put that on. Or if I'm cleaning, I'll just listen to it. So yeah, I mean, that's the alternative. But actually, like having the CD I do have a cassette player. It's attached to me. I have like one of those cassette player vinyl CD combination record player thingies.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I would buy the cassette if I could find it, because I don't know if it's on CD, but it might be. But yeah, you're right. I mean, that's pretty awesome. And it's one of those movies, again, yeah, I wish I was old enough to go see it in 1988 when it came out, or just to see it like with you. When you got to see it with a live audience, I've always watched that movie alone. So,
aww.
And that's like one. And yeah, I'm going to say it now. Suck it, people who are haters on Nightmare 4.
Aww.
I love that movie. It's awesome.
It's hard to believe that people can hate it.
Like, people hate it, and it's just like, I don't know where the hate comes from. I mean, none of these movies are Oscar winners or masterpieces. They just, it's, and also you have to take into consideration, I think people sometimes forget, maybe I'm wrong, I don't know, but people sometimes forget, like, the dumbest movie you love, a lot of people may hate. You know, right, you right. know, in whatever way you kind of see that. Like, I mean, I know Nightmare 4 for me is something that's very, very personal, because it was one of the first horror movies, like, I've said it before, and I actually got to say it to the protagonist in the film, Lisa Wilcox, who plays Alice. I got to say it to her. I'm like, this film is why I'm at this convention. This film is why I'm talking into this microphone right now, because it had such a good... It's such a strong foundation into who I am as a person. You know, especially when you grow up as a girl, especially during my time and the people I was around, it was just all this just machismo energy and just really downplaying the presence of a woman and the strength of a woman and what we can do. I always felt there was always this culture of us being just secondary and just not being... You know, not possessing any kind of power. And I think for a lot of other, especially women and horror fans, when we get to see these female characters that, you know, are taking on these extreme cases of survival and these really supernatural and these very fantastic ways, that's empowering. And that's super cool for, you know, how old was I? 1988, when I was, gosh, 6-7 years old, and seeing this, you know, when you're 6-7 years old, you're going to think most of these horror films are like the best movies in the world. So, and I just wanted to say that, like, that's why that film resonated with me so much. And I would wait for it, you know, when they would play it for a Friday night movie on a local television station, like every single Friday when they started doing that. I would watch, you know, all of the crazy genre films they would play, but Nightmare 4 was the one that I just, that night it was an event. Mm-hmm. So, rant over, but
you're fine. You're absolutely fine. I can definitely understand it. That one is actually one of my, out of the whole series, that one's my favorite. I also,
really?
Yes, it's my favorite. I love the original. The first one was great. To be honest with you, I didn't like the second one. Freddy was, you know, actually scary in that one, and that's not what bothered. I did not like the main character. He was sweaty. Like, I don't get it. and then one of the things that I remember recently finding out about it is that I heard that the original script was made in like a week. So that is pretty awesome, in my opinion, because I think that there was some kind of writer's strike going on.
Before?
I'm sorry?
Oh, you I didn't hear you for a second. Sorry about that.
Oh, no, you're fine. I said that, I heard that there was some kind of writer's strike going on.
During Nightmare 4, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's awesome for it to be written in 7 days. I approve. So, and I mean, I knew that there were people that didn't like it, but I didn't know that it's as many, you know?
There's active hate for it, and I just don't understand that. It's what Robert Englund said was kind of perfect. It was the MTV Nightmare movie. It was, you know, it wasn't perfect by any stretch, but I can't help it. I just love it. There's no way to wrap my brain around it. And I also said, you know, I tweeted not a while ago. I was just like, you know, considering the fact that there was a writer strike and it was a rushed production, can you give it a break? I mean, it's not a movie they got to sit on for a long time.
Right.
They had to put out this movie for better or worse, and they put out what they could. And so I don't really fault them for it, considering the climate of the times and considering how New Line Cinema was just orbiting at that point, because they were making so much money off of this franchise. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, especially you can't compare it to 3, but if you're going to compare the production to 3, they had more time. I mean, they called Wes Craven back. They said, right, you know, right there, he wrote the first draft. I mean, they really, all of that, considering you can't really compare the two. And also, yeah, it was a movie for the kind of hip young generation kind of thing, kind of quick pace, fast things. Like, that's what Rennie Harlan was into. He was inspired by Chinese action films. So there you have it. I mean, I'm not making excuses for it. I'm just kind of saying, I'm just giving the real. So, and people still are gonna hate it, and that's fine. I'm not one of those people, because it's sometimes it's the simplest film that can make you, that can really be definitive of who you are as a person. And I think I credit Nightmare 4 for a lot of this horror stuff that I'm into.
Mm-hmm. Definitely understandable. Okay, so did you have anything else you wanted to share?
No, real quick, do you have anything planned for the next couple of weeks or a couple of months as far as horror conventions goings on, anything?
I do, actually. One new thing coming up as well. Well, I plan on going to Spooky Empire. That is on April 1st to the 3rd. As far as it goes with meeting Anthony Michael Hall, I love 16 Candles, The Breakfast Club, Warehouse 13. I know Amy Steele from Friday the 13th, too, is going to be there in April Fool's Day. Depending on how her line is, maybe, but I don't know. I have a feeling that her line's probably going to be long.
Oh, I'm jealous again. I would love to meet Amy Steele, but keep going.
There's also cast members from Nightmare on Elm Street 3 and 4 that's going to be there. Depending on the line. And who else? Oh, I recently, when I checked again, I think that they added this because I did not remember seeing this. There are going to be cast members from George Romero's Day of the Dead. And I love that movie. So I think that I need to go, especially since last year, this past October, I was able to check out the place where they filmed it. So that would be cherry on top. Lloyd Kaufman's going to be there. Alex Vincent, Mike Christopher. He's so awesome. He's super duper nice and down to earth. And just the last thing, there's going to be something new that I'm going to start doing with Real Queen of Horror. And I forgot to tell you this the last time we spoke. I think I was probably still in the planning process. I plan on interviewing just people within the horror community. As you know, the horror community is always looked at in a negative light. So something I'd like to do is to celebrate the community as well as the people within the community. Rather, if you're a fan, just a fan, or a blogger, photographer, actor, director. As for right now, I'm pushing for them to come out on Fridays.
No, that sounds good. So it's going to be a weekly thing. So
it's going to be a weekly
thing. I'm looking forward to it. So is there anything else? Because I think we're about ready to move on.
Okay, so when we come back, we are going to start talking about the horror Oscars.
Looking for something different in your podcast library? Then why not check out the podcast Under the Stairs? I'm the host, Duncan McLeish, and joining me each week will be a special guest as we examine some classic, old-school horror favourites, as well as some modern classics. That's not to say that we don't tackle some of the, let's say, more questionable entries into the horror genre. And if all that wasn't enough, we have a subset of shows called Baz V Horror, where our horror novice, the Baz, tackles horror in all shapes and forms to see who will come out victorious. So what are you waiting for? The show can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com and on Stitcher and iTunes. The podcast Under the Stairs is a proud member of Legion Podcast Network. This is Duncan McLeish from Under the Stairs, signing off.
So horror at the Oscars, it's something that I think a lot of horror fans notice because it seems with horror films and the Oscars, there seems to be that kind of high culture, low culture thing that has been thought about for me personally over the past few years because, you know, what are the biggest Oscar winners as far as what we consider to be horror films? You know, one in particular is Silence of the Lambs, but, you know, you'll hear people throw titles around like it's a thrill, or genre titles like it's a thriller or it's a suspense movie, or, you know, that no one will directly say horror. It's like a nasty word in the whole Oscar stratosphere. But, you know, you got to consider who the Oscar voters are. Last time we checked, as far as statistics wise, it was 94% white, 76% men, and the average age is 63. So not quite the target audience for horror films. And, you know, there's also this kind of elitist kind of idea of what an Oscar-worthy film is. But we want to break that down because there have been, for the lack of horror films that have been nominated in the big categories, there are some horror films that have been nominated or have even won. So, but I also wanted to talk about, real quick, to bring it up front, so we're talking about, you know, today's context, Spectravision, which is Elijah Wood's film production company, which when I was reading the article, I was thinking about Xena, because I can't wait as our budding independent filmmaker. I hope nothing but the best for her, and hope that, you know, she really gets in with these awesome people who are doing these great things as far as making getting your film out there much more accessible. So the article I found on Forbes.com, it's titled Elijah Wood's Plan to Get a Horror Film to the Oscars. And what I love what him and his two business partners were kind of saying about getting a horror film at the Oscars was a quote, "We're fighting for the legitimization of the genre. There's a strange dichotomy in Hollywood where horror is the most financially stable category and yet it's rarely recognized for awards. Our ultimate goal is for a horror film to win Best Picture." And if anyone doesn't know, Elijah Wood was the producer. This company was the one who distributed and produced A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which is a film that we talked about. So, Xena, what we're going to pretty much do is kind of, I'm just kind of going to go down the list of all of these great films that have been nominated or have won Oscars. So jump in like Double Dutch whenever you feel necessary.
Okay, that sounds good.
Great. So Rosemary's Baby from 1968 won for Best Screenplay and Best Supporting, and, well, I think it was nominated for Best Supporting Actress, but I'm pretty sure it won for Best Screenplay. But I need to double check that. But those were the two categories where it did get nominations. I think they did win, because I remember hearing about some backlash recently about Mia Farrow. I'm like, well, why wasn't Mia Farrow nominated for Best Actress? Because I thought she gave the most compelling performance of the film. I would have to agree. The Exorcist from 1973, that's also a well-known one, for a quote, "This film got a ton of nods, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Supporting Actress, and the list goes on. It got 9 nominations in total and won for Best Sound and Best Screenplay. The Exorcist has the distinction of being the first horror movie to be nominated for a Best Picture Academy Award." So,
I mean, I can see that, though. I can definitely see why it would have about 10 nominations. So,
yeah, especially for sound, the sound is a good one, because I think sound, I feel like the sound in The Exorcist was, even to this day, is very jarring for me, because it's one of those films where everyone has that film where you know what's going to happen, but it still makes you jump,
mm-hmm.
or still kind of, it still gets under your skin, even if you've seen it 1,000 times, or the movie is older than you. So that's definitely one. For the most part, as far as this list is concerned, a lot of these films were nominated in, you know, Best Achievement and Makeup categories. So those behind the scenes categories, which are as important as the upfront ones, but, you know, no one really remembers these, or sometimes these, when these awards are given out, they're not even televised. So, like American Werewolf in London from 1981, it won for Best Achievement in Makeup. Aliens 1986 won for Best Visual Effects Sound Editing. The Fly, same year, won for Best Achievement in Makeup. Bram Stoker's Dracula from 1992 won Best Costume Design, Best Sound Effects, Editing, and Best Makeup. Sweeney Todd from 2007 was nominated for Best Actor, Best Costume Design, and Best Art Direction, and it won for, yeah, won for Best Art Direction. And another big blockbuster film, Jaws, was nominated for Oscars, including Best Picture, but ended up winning Best Editing, Best Score, and Best Sound. It totally could have won for Best Picture, but that's a whole other story. Beetlejuice, which from 1988, which was helmed by V. Neil as far as Best Achievement in Makeup, so she won an Academy Award for that. And, of course, we mentioned Silence of the Lambs earlier from 1991. With a half a dozen nominations, it won Best Picture, Best Oscar, Best Director, Best Actress, and Best Screenplay. The Silence of the Lambs is the first and only horror movie to ever win a Best Picture Award. There's three more that should be noted as well. Jurassic Park from 1993, it won 3 Oscars. Again, Best Sound Effects Editing, Best Sound, Best Visual Effects. Misery from 1990. This is the one where Kathy Bates won for Best Actress. So this is the one horror film where a Best Actress was nominated and won. And also from Sleepy Hollow from 1999, was nominated for Best Cinematography, Best Art Direction, and Best Costume Design. So it won for best costume design. So yeah. It's like with those big awards, the ones that stand out, like best actress and best film, like it rarely does a horror film get those nods. So,
which is sad.
Yeah, I can't. I honestly can't point to a reason why. When you brought this up, because I wanted to really go back into the history and dig in and kind of, you know, see some trends and see where horror is lacking as far as getting, you know, the recognition it deserves, and also where it's mostly recognized. And of course, it's in special effects, it's in editing, it's in sound, which is, like I said, just as good. But unfortunately, you know, people, if you're not paying attention, people can, you know, easily pass over those.
It's something I wanted to go back on with Sweeney Todd. I had no idea that it was, you said it was nominated, or did it win?
It won for Best Art Direction.
Because I absolutely loved the movie. Because truth be told, I'm not big on award shows. I don't watch them. I don't see a point to doing that.
It's frustrating. It's frustrating for me. And then when I see documentaries about horror and they're talking about, you know, your Silence of the Lambs and those kind of films, I find it personally frustrating too. I can see it on their face, and it's kind of like this mutual frustration. And it's like this silent solidarity of like, yeah, you're right, because they don't call it a horror film. And then I think that's really unfortunate, because that's exactly what it is. The plot in and of itself.
Even when you look on Netflix and you go to certain categories, like, this really ticks me off, and I feel like calling up Netflix, excuse me, this is not a thriller. But I'll find some, you know, horror movies in that category. Like, with certain ones, okay, I guess you can put them in, if they were in both sections, like the thriller and the horror. But I don't know if you ever take notice to it. If you haven't, just take a look at it next time. Just go to the thriller section and just scroll through it, and you'll see a whole bunch of horror movies in there. And then if you go to the horror movies, those movies that you've seen, they're nowhere to be found in that section. So,
and yeah, it's weird. It's like this slippery slope. Now, I am one of those people who feel like horror is a much more broader genre than people like to imagine it is. Mm-hmm. So you're right. It should be really horror / thriller. I know the distinction. Like, I'm just going off of like pop knowledge. So, you know, a thriller, I guess. Again, I think thriller is one of those shades of gray where it kind of blends with suspense. Like, I'm thinking, right, like just recently with the news about Jacob's Ladder. Now, would you consider that a horror film or more of a thriller, or both equally?
I think that it is both. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right, because there are some that is both. But I'm talking about ones where, let me see, like, I don't think that it's on there anymore, but An American Werewolf in London.
Oh, that's a horror movie.
That's what I'm saying. That's a horror movie. Oh, well, something else I wanted to bring up was one of my favorite movies that I think, well, I'm not too sure if it was nominated, but I think Natalie Portman won Best Actress for Black Swan. Right. It was also nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Cinematography, and Best Editing. So that's pretty awesome. And I remember telling you, with Natalie Portman, you know, I'm not a huge fan of hers. The last time I really liked her was when she was in Leon the Professional. And but she really surprised me. And this one, it was like the role was meant for her.
Yeah, I was going to say, I totally forgot about Black Swan. You're right. That's a really good pick. Again, people don't consider it horror film. Even I have a... I guess I've fallen short on seeing it as one, but it is definitely a film within the genre, because it has those supernatural elements. I thought, and of course, it's a film that I absolutely love. I need to own it. But yeah, if you remember when it first came out, like, I saw it with a couple of my friends, and we saw it at the indie theater here in Philly, and it was wall to wall. It was sold out. There was no empty seat when we went to go see it that one weekend. So, and that was a really fun experience, because I've never been in a full movie theater. So, and it was not terrible. And so I enjoyed myself, and I enjoyed the film. So I'm glad I got to go see it while it was out.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
I think as far as the movies that, you know, especially recently, some of the movies that I think have been overlooked, like, I know there was a little bit of a There's a little bit of mumbling and grumbling over the Babadook being completely overlooked, and then a lot of backlash. Not backlash, a lot of making excuses here and there. Well, oh, the movie wasn't made in time for nominations, yada, 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 so forth and so on. And, you know, even with the movie we're going to be discussing tonight, It Follows, like all of those films that are... Yeah, all of those films that are kind of gaining a lot of considerable buzz amongst genre film fans, horror fans, you know, they are, I guess, your quote art house films. I guess you would think that they would be quote acceptable to the Oscar voters, things like that. But no, they still get overlooked. I think it's one of the reasons why the Saturn Awards exist. And unfortunately, the Saturn Awards are not televised, which is very, 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 very unfortunate. It makes no sense to me. We are in the prime time of genre television and film, of where like a lot of people are seeing these movies and television shows and loving them. And you would think that they would put these things out for people to watch and see and enjoy. But no, the Saturn Awards are still something if you have to like really dig into the internet to kind of find out who's even nominated and who won, which is sad because there's a lot of great nominations and they pick really solid winners. Mm-hmm. So that's my other little rant I wanted to talk about, because the Saturn Awards is something I'm pretty passionate about, because it's where like us horror sci-fi fans get to like really, really get an award show that I think we would really enjoy. And, you know, you hear people huffing and puffing, like, you know, a lot of hate watching goes on with the Oscars, the Grammys, and all these other award shows. And I don't even watch that stuff anymore because it's just not worth it. And, you know, I haven't seen most of the movies, so I'm just not enjoying myself. I'm like, just like, I'm just a disgruntled horror fan who can't see an award show I would actually sit through. But
hopefully that would change, because I know that obviously you're not the only one who feels that way, you know?
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Maybe I should start a petition or something to get it on, but it's because awesome. It should be. They used to televise it, but they don't anymore. And I think that's dumb.
So I have a question for you. If you could give a horror movie that was made maybe within the last 15 to 10 years, an Oscar, for any kind of Oscar that you'd like. Do you have one in mind?
Well, the Babadook, for sure. That's mm-hmm. one of my personal... The as far as the hype machine, that's my movie. So, I think it deserves an award. I don't know if I would give it Best Picture. It depends on who it's nominated against. But as far as performance mm-hmm. of Essie Davis, absolutely. And maybe cinematography for that one as well.
Mm-hmm. I think I would give an award to The Cabin in the Woods that came out in 2012. Yes, because I feel like, you know, this movie isn't like, call it what you want. You know, I know there's many people who's like, oh, I hate it so much. Okay, that's that's fine. The people who didn't... who like really didn't care for the movie are the same ones who are screaming at the top of mountains at midnight that they want an original horror movie. And you know, I don't understand. You get it. I feel like, you know, it's two genres in one. It's a horror and it's in a comedy, but it's like, it's a slasher movie, but it's a smart slasher movie. You know, I would give it an award for Best Picture, just keeping it simple, because I feel like I don't feel like the acting was out of this world. I'm just mainly talking about the storyline and, you know, just, I did not expect it. I remember when the movie first came out, or even like a year before it came out, you know, it was getting a lot of buzz. I didn't read really any synopsis or too deep of a synopsis on it. Just, you know, try to keep it simple. Would watch the trailer, but something that's always awesome about a movie is when you watch the trailer and the trailer doesn't give away everything. So I think that one would definitely, I would give that one an award.
But I did want to ask you, I sent you a link because something I've used it in papers I've written for college, and it's something that has stuck with me for a long time for a disgruntled reasons. I wanted to ask, what did you think about the Oscar tribute to horror that was done a few years ago? That's on YouTube.
I was a little confused at first, confused because I wasn't too sure if they were being serious, not only for the beginning, but even just some of the movies that they were showing. And then even at the end of the tribute, who they showed. Like, they showed George Clooney, Kathy Bates. And it's just like, okay, well, what about like, John Carpenter or George Romero? Or, you know, like, what about those guys? Like, they're in horror, you know? I don't even know if they were even there or if they were invited. But I'm just thinking, if you are going to do a tribute to horror, why not have someone present it, or have people present it who are within the horror genre or love it, you know? And then even as far as it goes with the movies that they picked, it just seemed like they just randomly selected horror movies. So
I mean, they picked good horror movies, and it goes to it. It's funny that you're saying that as someone who only watched it for the first time recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest problem I have is that, you know, why are you throwing horror a bone? And like, just something, it just feels like such a throwaway. You just it didn't feel earnest or genuine. It just felt like just filler for your 3-hour award ceremony that people either fall asleep on or turn off halfway through, and then they come back for the big awards, if that. It's like, you know, if you recognized horror for what it is to begin with, it's just as legitimately good movies when done well that are worthy for Oscars, just like every other movie, you wouldn't have to do this silly tribute. And also, the other thing is that if you didn't take it seriously as a horror fan, then that's disappointing that you're like it, because they started off with the joke. Like, it starts off with Alec Baldwin and Steve Martin doing this Paranormal Activity parody, which, you know, we ha-ha for laughs, but, you know, again, because we're so passionate about this, it's really disheartening to do an Oscar tribute and, you know, not, I don't even know if John Carpenter is ever going to get the honorary Oscar, or even Wes Craven, or those guys who, you know, Cronenberg, you know, anyone. But no, it was just, let's bring out these Twilight people because they're here, and let's have them do the introduction that they did half assedly and half heartedly. And yeah, I mean, they showed the people who were at that Oscar award ceremony, who were a part of that montage.
So, did you watch this when it first aired, or?
No, I don't think so. I forget how I even found it. I forget what paper this was for. But I do know I used it. I use it as a template because I did have to do a lot of kind of mental and verbal kind of boxing matches with some of my professors who didn't understand how important horror is to our culture and to our society, because that's pretty much where my educational training comes from. And I had to really give it validity. I had to do the research to get them to understand, like, how important these films are and how they do have a point, quote unquote. It's just, you know, so that was irritating enough. And then to see this Oscar tribute thing, it was just kind of like, ugh. I mean, I can use it, but, you know, again, it's like, I feel like I'm fighting everywhere for the honor of horror. But yeah, I mean, so that was a small part of my college experience, and so I think that was the first time I saw it when I was doing research. I don't think I saw it when I first aired.
Okay. Well, because I don't watch award shows, I never even heard of it before. I had no idea that they did something like that.
So, just to wrap up, we are going to have some links about some articles pertaining to horror at the Oscars, and also a great one called 16 Horror Films That Were Snubbed by the Academy Awards, which includes Psycho, which blew my mind because I totally overlooked that one. I don't know how that got away with no nominations. But yeah, so we're going to have that for you.
Did you have anything else you wanted to share?
That is it.
Alrighty, so when we come back, we are going to continue on with, well, we're going to talk about The Witch.
I don't know that I ever thought any of us who worked on Halloween thought it would ever be a big hit. As a matter of fact, when it was first released, it was not.
The Witch was released in 2015, also subtitled A New England Folktale. The synopsis reads, a family in 1630s New England is torn apart by the forces of witchcraft, black magic, and possession. This was written and directed by Robert Eggers, and it stars Anya Taylor-Joy as Thomason, Ralph Ineson as William, Kate Dickey as Catherine, Harvey Scrimshaw as Caleb, Ellie Granger as Mercy, Lucas Dawson as Jonas, and this name is so eerie, Bathsheba Garnett as the witch. And for anyone who's a The Conjuring fan, that was the name of the antagonist in The Conjuring is Bathsheba. So that name always has this weird connotation with, I would never name my daughter that. So, Zena, would you get to start off? What did you think of it? Spoiler free.
Okay, well, I liked it. I had high hopes for it, but I still wasn't, you know, sure, but I still went in with a positive mind. I think what I like about it is that it's not about jump scares. You ever see a movie and or even watching the trailer, you just already know how it's going to end?
And yeah, I hate that.
I definitely felt like this one, it wasn't like that at all. Even as far as the pace is very, it's slow, but I feel like it's more like it's taking its time, you know, easing us into it. And something else that really stood out in the movie, for everything, as a whole production, was the camera work. I really, really love the camera work. And I found, you know, while I was watching, you know, it was just always hard to just look away because it was so smooth and just done delicately. I'm not one who's big on, you know, demon possession, but, you know, I do love a movie with witches and even creepy animals and just, of course, blood. You can't, who does not like blood? And I felt like this movie, it had that. It was something fresh. You know, even as far as the actors and actresses, they all did an amazing job. They all had like some kind of creepy factor to them. And they actually seemed like a real life family. Mm-hmm. So my favorite character is Ben Thomason. You know, I felt bad for her. I felt for her. And I also liked her brother, Caleb. So I think what makes this movie different from other horror movies is the beauty of it. Even though it's a horror, it just has like every scene seems to have like its own style to it. The costumes were on point. Like just looking at like the camera work, it just felt like every scene could have been just like a picture, or like mm-hmm. a painting or so. Could have even been in like Vogue, you know. I don't know if you look at Vogue, but you know, it could have been in that. And on top of that, the music score, it wasn't like blatantly in your face. It's so low and hardly there, but it was perfect for the movie because it, you hardly knew it was there. That's what made it haunting, if that made sense.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I told you I'm not, you know, for movies with demonic possession or movies even involving Satan, obviously I still watch them.
Yeah, I was going to say, you like demons, right?
I love demons. It's like I can't get enough of it. I just hope that people are willing to give it a chance. So what did you think about it?
Yeah, even with the backlash, it's I was mentioning this before. What I like about the movie is, again, there's no spoons being given out at the theater. It's like a movie you have to immerse yourself in. And I think the problem that people might have with it, it relies on your imagination for a lot of different ideas and things that you see, or things that you even don't see. But it also relies on really being immersed in what's going on. I think that's why the writer and director, Robert Eggers, I think that's why he took his time making sure that the costumes were handmade and doing his research. I heard it was like 10 years of research or wow, years and years of research to make sure that down to the letter of the dialogue being accurate up to what 1630s, from people who lived in 1630s New England sounded like, you know, the culture, what the houses look like, so everything was so pristine. And so, but you know, but I feel like even with it being so steeped and so placed firmly in this particular historical period, you can still identify with it. And also, this was pre-Salem witch trials, so there's some really great articles and essays that have been written about it that kind of just even talk about the idea of, you know, how witch accusations came to be. And one of my favorite ones was this idea that has been documented, was that, you know, conflicts between mothers and daughters was a big issue as to why a lot of young women had the finger pointed at them for being witches. And we'll get into that in the spoilers, but yeah, I loved this movie. I think it hit every nail on its way down the tree in a positive way. Just everything felt precise. I even loved the way it ended. It ended in such a great beat where it was an exciting moment for me, because I haven't had a feeling that way of a movie ending in a long time where it was like, oh, I wish they gave me more, but I'm glad that they didn't. I'm happy I didn't get more. Like I said, like, there was no spoon feeding. It was a movie that really wanted you to think about the concept of a witch. Even it wasn't just about what we saw in the literal sense, but also, again, just reading all these great perspectives on it. Just what does the witch mean in the context of your family dynamics, of the occult or religious definition of one, and all of these things. And so I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm ready to dive into spoilers. What do you think?
Yeah, we can do spoilers.
Okay, so this is a warning. If you have not seen The Witch and you do not want us to spoil this movie for you, this is your warning. I wanted to touch on the ending, because you told me that you liked the ending. I did not really care for the ending. I didn't hate it. It's just, I kind of just wanted more. Even if it was like 5 minutes more, you know, with Thomason float. I know I'm just like, hey, Zena, what about everything? I just have to talk about the ending first. You know, with Thomason floating up in the air with the other witches, it's just, I wanted to see more. That's all. Just anything. Just a little bit more. Like, especially like not so much of, you know, what happened to her 10 years down the line. I wonder what happened when people found her family. Obviously, she was nowhere to be found. I'm pretty sure that it probably got back to the town that they were staying in. And, hey, Thomason is missing. You know? I don't know.
So yeah, because they were excommunicated in the beginning, I don't think, no. I mean, I honestly don't think that anyone would have found their family. I personally believe that their family would have just disintegrated. They would have, their lifeless bodies would have rotted. They would have turned to bone, and then they would have turned to dust. Maybe in a scenario where, you know, some kids are feeling rebellious and they kind of go outside of the village that or the community that they were staying in and find them, sure. But I don't really think that's the case. I think I like the idea of no one ever finding that family. And I disagree, because I think it ended perfectly. We didn't need to see any more, because we saw everything we needed to see as far as the story was concerned. I mean, because I don't even consider Thomason a witch per se, or the witch. I don't think she was the witch of the movie. I think she just, it was a part of kind of the folklore of, you know, of being in this corner of her. She felt like she didn't have a choice. I think, you know, we talked about this before. She did have a choice, but she chose to not be alone, because, again, you know, you are come from this super religious family and you're excommunicated. So she had a choice. She could have gone back, but she didn't. And maybe she didn't think she could have gone back to that community. So she feels like whatever happened to her family or all of this is kind of an accumulation of where she's supposed to be or where she feels like she should be, maybe. Mm-hmm. So if that makes any sense. But it's one of those films where you have to kind of just talk it out and think about things, because nothing's, they don't give you a clear explanation as to what or why or how.
Right. And which is fine. You know, I don't feel like it has to do that. Just, you know, not trying to keep on going back to it, but just the kind of person that I feel like I am, And, you know, I know that there are movies where they just end abruptly or, you know, there's no, they don't really explain anything and it is what it is. But because I just feel like there were certain things in the movie that they left out and they didn't show enough of, like the witch. I wanted to see the witch more. I didn't get to see her as much as I wanted to. What, she was on screen for like three times, you know, which is fine. I don't like it, but I'm fine with it. I can do without seeing her. Just that when it comes to the ending, because I just felt like it was like a buildup. We were all just waiting for it, waiting for something, waiting for something to be explained. And I don't really feel like, I know that there are movies where you do not have to explain certain situations, but even as far as it goes with the witch, there are, and we had this talk where there are different kinds of witches, you know, and probably in that time and age, it just seemed like they weren't good ones. They were evil ones. But, you know, even with when the witch, what she did with Caleb, and I guess it was supposed to be, you know, when it comes to Christians, you know, that you shouldn't mess with temptation. But she didn't, I have no idea why she did what she did to Caleb. Not that I need to know. It's just, you know, I was trying to figure that out. Because as far as it went with the baby, what was the baby's name? Samuel?
Yeah.
As far as it goes with the baby, we saw what happened with the baby. We saw why she took the baby. But just with the ending, I just wanted just a little snippet of something. And I feel like the whole movie, it was kind of like that where you didn't really... there's no need to explain. And like I said, it was fine for those certain parts, but because it was leading up to that part and I just wanted something, it just kind of,
yeah, because I didn't think we needed an explanation, because again, I put it in the context of what a witch symbolizes and the witch taking many forms, like the rabbit, like the visions the mother was having, the glamour that she did on Caleb. It wasn't about, like, we didn't have to see, I didn't feel like we had to see so much of her, because really what the witch symbolized to me was destruction and nihilism and the destruction of really the family first, but also not even first. It doesn't really have a hierarchy, but like destruction of the pride of the father, of that kind of religious piousness that I think even God frowns upon. He's not looking for your arrogance. Those kinds of issues, and also this, the entire context of the film of me, the film for me was about just this, the breakdown of the family. And we don't need a reason for it. It just sometimes that just happens. And even if we're talking about religious symbolism, the idea of, because it's funny the way they framed, the way Eggers framed the community when they were leaving, like you're showing a scene of what the family's leaving behind, and you should see them on his carriage. And the idea of, and the religious concepts of leaving God's hedge of protection, and that's what the physical community looked like, the hedge of protection. So if you're going outside of that, you are susceptible to any kind of evil or anything else deemed outside of what is considered to be protection, especially for this, what are we led to believe is a religious family who are in this in the confines of their God and what that God means to them. And when things just start breaking down, the crops fail, like everything, like not, you know, seeing that rabbit and thinking that it's food and thinking that it's possible, you know, food for dinner, and they're starving and all these things. So I didn't need a reason. I understood the reason being she just wanted to just mess their life up, you know, just to put it very simplistically. And that was reason enough for me. And that's, I think that's what makes the movie, what elicits fear. It may not be scary to everyone. I don't think it certainly is, considering, you know, hearing reviews from other people. And not even for me, and that's not scary in a sense, but I think, again, we talk about horror a lot, so horror's intent is always to elicit fear, and that kind of fear and what scares people is going to be different for every single person, like, you know, no matter what. And For me, with the fear of it is her not having a clear motive, like for every single, or in conjunction with Black Phillip not having, like, there's just no rhyme or reason. It's just, it is what it is to make a point about the power of this other side of the coin of these people who are presented to us to be very godly and very positive and the complete opposite of that. So that's why it was so effective for me.
Just another thing I wanted to go back to was, even with the beginning of the film, I did like the beginning of it. I felt like it set the tone for everything, especially for me. That's when I realized that I liked Thomason, because I was looking back on just, you know, like when they pretty much got kicked out of that town, and it was like a shock to her, and it just seemed like she didn't want to go, but obviously she had to, because with her father seemed like he was a prideful man and not willing to back down, not willing to say when he's wrong. As far as the mother, obviously she cared about her family, but she's deeply in love with her family and deeply in love with her relationship with God. I did like that, like the start of the film of it. And even with Caleb, which I know we spoke about with him going through puberty. So I can see how the witch was able to tempt him, you know, by looking attractive.
No, I was going to say also, it's hard to not notice when the camera was showing us that Caleb was taking glimpses at his sister's cleavage. That's another, it's just one of those things where it's just like, you know, you're, like outside of the witch, you know, you're just kind of screwing it up for your children, because they're your two oldest are going through puberty, are and your other two children are going to go through it too. So what are you going to do? I mean, they're human beings. They have to be around other different types of people, and for you to just, you know, excommunicate yourself with, like, what are they supposed, like, It was just a bad setup from jump. It was just, there's no forethought. It was the act that the father, the decision he makes to leave, it was steeped in selfishness. It was very opposite, I think, of what he was trying to purport. And that's not even very clear. Like, I think if anything, and again, it's not a big deal to me, but I would want to know why they're leaving. I want to know, like, what kind of, you know, what kind of conflicting ideologies were going on as far as religion is concerned. But again, it's not necessary, but it would be interesting to know, but it's not, I don't need it. But again, it's because it's hard, because you're taking this extreme and you have these children, and you were 12, 13 years old once. So and to forget that context of being a child and, you know, not having, and the disadvantage of being on your own with your family and not knowing what your future is going to be because of that is interesting that he put those little glimpses that kind of was not a hint of incest, but this kind of idea that this kid is clearly thinking about sex, but maybe he shouldn't be looking at his sister's cleavage, but right. You know.
Well, okay. I do have a question for you. So, did you think that this movie was scary?
I don't know. I don't even... I can't really answer that question, because it's like, well, it's... I can understand where the fear would come from, I think. Maybe people who are, no, I can't even say that. It's, I really don't know. I can see how it would get under other people's skin. I think it had very quiet, jarring moments. Like I said, like you said, it doesn't rely on jump scares, but the moments that really kind of are put in there that can elicit some kind of uneasiness, not necessarily scares, but like uneasiness, a kind of like shock and awe in a sense, mm-hmm. Not shock value kind of things, but like just points in the movie where you're seeing kind of extremes of how insidious the witch is operating. So I thought that was pretty cool. As far as it didn't scare me, but it made me, it effectively and successfully made me uncomfortable and made me go and made me do the whole jaw drop in the theater, the quiet one. So yeah, there was certainly some uneasiness and moments that I considered disturbing, but disturbing in a very surface way, not anything that, you know, I take to heart. But I don't know if that answered your question, and I feel like I'm being long-winded about it because I didn't want to say yes or no because it's not as easy as saying one or the other.
Mm-hmm. No, I can understand because that seems to be what people are talking about. There are people who are saying that it's completely terrifying, and then there are people who are saying that it's not scary. Obviously, it depends on what scares you, but the question is what's scary to you, obviously. I think that it's one of those movies where it's, you know, thought-provoking, it's solid, of course, it's compelling, but for me, it wasn't scary. Not saying for everyone else, just for me. And then I think another thing is, you know, when the movie was first released, they were officially like declaring it being the most terrifying movie, like when they were marketing the movie. And I feel like that was kind of like a big mistake because, you know, people go in with expectations and obviously people already went in with that. But I think that that's just that kind of made it worse, especially for the people who, you know, they're not fans of the slow burn horror movies.
Yeah, I can't fault people for having, you know, negative opinions on it because I don't understand them, but I can't because, again, not every movie is going to be a hit for everyone who sees it. So,
mm-hmm.
And I feel the same way about a lot of other popular films that, you know, people tend to like that I don't. So, at first it kind of made me irritated and kind of side-eyed, but I was like, you know what? Well, there's a lot of other films that I don't personally like that people like. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a very generic sweeping idea that, you know, everyone, it's all a matter of taste and what you just like and what you don't like. There doesn't have to be any kind of long-winded explanation as to why you do or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I feel about that. But it's one movie I would definitely recommend. I don't know if you wanted to talk about some of the other elements, mostly the what is, to me, perplexing popularity of Black Phillip.
Yeah, we can talk about Black Phillip. I wasn't a huge fan. Like, I thought that it was a cool idea. Like, I told you, I feel like I keep on repeating myself. I love watching all kinds of horror movies, but usually the ones that really get to me are the ones that involve, like, possession or demons or something with Satan or even touch with religion. Like, I know when I first saw Wreck 2, it just completely creeped me out in a good way. Like, I'll watch it again, but, you know, it's just a feeling. So when people were going crazy over him at first, it was kind of like, okay, I get it. He's a black goat. He's a goat. He's supposed to represent Satan. And, you know, but, you know, some people, you know how some people can be. They take things a little bit too far, in my opinion. like, it was funny at first, you know, with that whole live deliciously thing. But it's just like, just goes back to with Thomason having a choice, which we talked about. When Black Phillip asked her, which that was a really cool scene, I'm not gonna lie. When he asked her, you know, if she wants to live deliciously or, you know, do she want to die, right? And obviously she chose to live deliciously since she was floating up in the air with the other witches.
Yeah, I was gonna say, first of all, you didn't actually see the goat's lips move, but I think people would know that by the tone of the movie as we're talking about it. But no, I'm starting to think, I feel like the strength of Black Phillip's popularity may hinge upon that last scene with Thomason, because you don't see him, but you see his physical form and you hear his voice in a hushed tone. So he's cloaked in this kind of mysteriousness, but you clearly get the idea that the goat is this now manifestation that looms over Thomason at this one point towards the end. So because that for me was a pretty cool, that, like you said, it was a really cool scene. I didn't know what to expect. I did think that Thomas's two younger siblings, the youngest ones, that they were talking to this goat. Because that's kind of how it starts, right? It's almost in the same in like every like super almost supernatural movie similar to this. Like Poltergeist is a good example. You're gonna start communicating with the youngest child or whatever because they're more susceptible to these kinds of things. They're more open to the ideas of what is not seen as logical being, you know, they're a part of reality, not just their reality, but a part of a reality in TM. So I feel like we should have brought like a Black Phillip expert on the podcast to talk about this. Cause yeah, that's the only thing I can imagine because I didn't leave the movie theater like Black Phillip. Like it was not like this big, yeah, it wasn't this big revelation of like, I have to get Black Phillip merchandise or I have to, like, it wasn't that for me. But his importance in the film, I thought was really cool to watch kind of transpire. But the popularity of him, the goat, I'm like, mm-hmm. I don't get it.
Yeah, I know, and that's what I mean. I really didn't get it, and you know those little kids, Mercy and what was the other one's name?
Jonas.
Jonas. Oh my! Especially that Jonas was just a follower. But that Mercy, though, you know, I remember saying this in my video review, you know, I know that I wasn't born in the 1600s, and I know if I was, I probably would have been a slave or something. But if for some reason, you know, they asked me to babysit them, I wouldn't do it because I know that little girl would annoy the crap out of me. And on top of that, I feel like this all started, like, well, with the family turning against Thomason. Was because of her. Yeah, I know that, you know, remember when they were by the river and, you know, she just wanted, you know how like little kids can be annoying. Like, I don't have a younger sibling, so
I was the youngest?
Yes.
Okay.
So I was that annoying person. But I do have a nephew, and technically because he was born when I was 7, we're very close at age, you know? So it's like I was able to like, he's more of like a little brother. You know, because we kind of grew up together that close. So, you know, sometimes I remember I would tell him scary stories just so he can just leave me alone, you know? God, I was terrible, Ashley. Bless his heart. Anyway, but like, you know, sometimes you just tell that to little kids just so you can shut them up. Scaring them will shut them up and they'll leave you alone. And I guess with the sister, with Mercy, you know, obviously she held that against her. And, you know, with that whole... I told you I have a thing for witches. I used to love reading about witches and watching anything with witches in it. I still do. But it's like, it just seems like it was that time where you can just call anyone a witch and people would believe you. And I feel like I can't believe they were listening to that little girl. I don't even know how old she was. 4, 5, 6. I don't know. She was just annoying. She was so annoying. And they actually believed her. So.
Yeah. Maybe they believed her because, again, this also dealt with the gender dynamics of during the time of the limitation of a woman's autonomy, which was kind of next to none, especially within the context of their family, because it seemed like, you know, her mother was content with just being a wife and a mom, and you can see that when she lost Samuel, it was just like this. And I think any mother would feel the same way. This level of grief and just like she failed as a mother, and the whole idea of Samuel being in Thomason's care when he disappeared, like, you know, her failure as a potential mother and a potential caretaker. And so, and then I think about Mercy, who well, if she had lived, would have gotten to those phases in her life. And I think, I'm like, would they believe her? I almost feel like they.
I see.
I mean, like, well, yeah, you're right.
Because, you know, Mm-hmm. So, and that's another thing too. I had no idea that Mercy and Jonas died. I didn't know. I was wondering at the end, well, what happened to those two annoying? And but I didn't think about it for too long because I didn't care. But now, because I'm no, how did they die?
That's a good question. I've been thinking about that almost all day, or since I saw the movie. And today, I was just like, you know what? I don't remember how they died, or I don't remember what happened to them.
Yeah.
But they clearly, something happened to them, clearly. I just don't remember exactly what. And again, because this film is so new and I didn't get a chance to go back out to the theater to see it, I've only seen it once. I am looking forward to seeing it again so I can find those little Easter eggs and those things that I missed the first time I saw it. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a good point, though. But they were gone, clearly.
Yeah.
But.
And, you know, something else about the movie that I liked is that the whole movie was filled with just, like, paranoia. Like, you didn't really know who to trust. You have Thomason, and she looks innocent, but obviously, you know, sometimes it's always the innocent ones. Then you have those two annoying twins. They were just creepy, okay? Like, I would never want to be alone with them, ever. If I ever had, never mind. Now I'm getting ridiculous. I wouldn't want to be alone with them, you know? Caleb, obviously, it seemed like he had such a good heart, you know, and obviously evil does not discriminate, and it does not matter if you have a good heart, because you remember before that, whatever happened to him with that witch, you know, he wanted to go out to hunt and just find something for his family in order to survive.
Right.
But I felt like, and then even with the father was... he was too prideful. And because they are religious, I know in the Bible it says that you are not supposed to be prideful. So, which I didn't understand, like looking back on it, at first I thought it was a good thing, you know, but it was just, he just seemed like the kind of person where he did not want help from anyone. He refused to ask if he need help. And even remember when the mom, once again, was attacking Thomason, and about her father's gold cup or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she was blaming Thomason, and Thomason's, you know, like...
I think it was her cup. And he took it, because I think he was trying to sell
right,
it or something,
right.
If I remember correctly.
And that's what I mean. Like, he just sat back and let it happen. He was letting it happen. You know, he wasn't going to admit at first, you know, that it was him. And then even when he did say it, it was kind of like, yeah, it was me.
Yeah, like it was like the movie kind of itself was kind of set up to make Thomason and her mom at odds with each other a bit.
Which it always seemed like that.
Mm-hmm.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say about the movie?
I mean, not really. I would just recommend everyone go see it. There's a lot of great, like I said, a lot of great essays on it that we are going to put in the show notes. From Cultural Gutter, a great article written by Angela Engler that I highly recommend you watch. We also watch or read. And we're also going to link you to a little bit of behind the scenes of The Witch as far as something written about Black Phillip. And also an article from Bitch Flicks about The Witch and how it deals with Thomason and female adolescence. So that's another great one as well.
Okay. All right. Well, just the final thing I wanted to say is that overall I liked the movie. I don't feel like it was a scary movie, as I said before, but it's still a horror movie. It's just a different kind of horror movie. It's a slow burn, but it had plenty of great moments, and I overall had a great experience. However, and I even remember leaving the theater feeling disturbed. However, it's been like a couple of weeks now since I've seen the movie. And I no longer feel that way. So it's not a long-lasting feeling. But at the same time, just for myself, although I did enjoy the movie, I will probably never watch the movie again. Not in a mean way. Not because I hated it. I just feel like it's a one-time movie.
It's funny that you say that. I feel this. I'm buying The Witch on Blu-ray as soon as it comes out. But there's one movie, and I like this movie too. But I've wanted to watch it again, but I haven't gotten around to doing it because it got under my skin that much, and that is Starry Eyes. So
oh
it's like,
my God!
because I don't want to say I'll never watch it again, but I've wanted to, but I'm just like, I want to sleep tonight. So yeah, it's one of those films for me.
Love that movie. So what do you give The Witch as far as it goes with Queen's Skull?
I give it a 5. I hope it's nominated for an Oscar, but we'll see.
I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
So, and what about your Minority Report rating as far as diversity?
Well, it's going to be a 1 wider than the 2015 Oscars. Well, 2016.
Yeah, 2015, 2016, both now.
Okay.
Pretty much. I feel the same way. But again, within the context of what this film is, I wouldn't have wanted to see no slaves, but you know, that could have been a thing, but I'm glad it wasn't. It was just Eggers had a really tight focus on Thomason and her family and Black Phillip and everything else that was going on. So that was the focus. So I'm kind of glad. So I give it a 1 as well. It was white where it, because it had to be.
Mm-hmm.
And for historical context, all that good stuff. So yeah, not a problem.
So when we come back, we are going to give our movie recommendations. All right, and we're back, guys. We are ready to give you guys our movie recommendations. So I guess I'm going to go first, and I'm going to recommend you guys checking out 10 Cloverfield Lane. I saw it this past weekend, and I absolutely loved it. I loved Cloverfield, and I know there's been a lot of people who would say, that's one that can have a connection. I can see the connection right there. I felt like it was kind of like two movies within one, and I just feel like it's a great follow-up, you know, for Cloverfield. But if you haven't seen Cloverfield, it's still just, you know, it's still a great standalone horror thriller.
I was about to ask you questions about it because I just saw 10 Cloverfield Lane today, but I don't want to get into spoiler territory, and this is just giving her recommendations, but
yeah.
I have questions.
Okay.
But my recommendation or, you know, one of my recent watches that I had a lot of fun with was Southbound from mm-hmm. 2015, but it just became available on VOD, I believe. VOD and Blu-ray, I think? Or just recently, definitely VOD at the very least. That's definitely a great horror anthology to check out if you are interested in, I think just horror in general. I loved it. I can't really say too much about it. Again, it's well acted. The all of the stories kind of connect with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, I haven't checked this one out, but it's on my watch it list. I've been hearing really good things about it. I really like, and you mentioned this to me before as well, I really like the poster for it. Don't you?
Yeah, the road pentagram.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is.
Okay. I remember when I was checking out the trailer, and then I also checked out on IMDb. They also kind of rate it as like a science fiction thriller. Do you agree with that?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm not yelling at you.
No, you're fine. I just thought I would ask because it from the trailer it seemed like a horror to me, but
we just talked about this.
Mm-hmm.
People are so afraid of that word, and it's just like that is a horror. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
No, it's a horror movie.
Okay.
No, I'm not yelling at you. I'm just, it annoys me because I don't want to get into spoilers, but there's so, I mean, you know, it deals with the devil. It deals with these, like, you know, it deals with creatures. It deals with, you know, moral ambiguity, like all of these things with these highly supernatural elements with, you know, people not being actual people, like all types of, every possible scenario, I feel like, scenario of a what a super, oh God, I can't talk tonight. Cut that out. You're right. Yeah, no, they're not. They're wrong. It's a horror movie. So as we're winding down, we got some feedback. We got 2 emails from some listeners. Thank you for listening and for sending us some feedback. First is from Lakeitha Tolbert. She writes, I've been a horror fan since I was old enough to watch movies. I blame mom. Thank you for celebrating black women in horror. Despite its problem with killing off black men, horror has been one of the more egalitarian genres when it comes to marginalized people. So thank you for noticing. Thank you, Lakeithah, for writing and giving us that comment. We do our best to kind of talk about horror in the most generic ways, but also kind of talk about the black women involved in it as well. Also, we got an email from someone named Paul Griff. Hi, Paul. Thanks for writing. Thanks for listening. He says, hey, just came across your show today, and I wanted to say that I really enjoyed your latest episode, which was our Blaxploitation Valentine episode from February. So again, thank you, Paul, and thank you all listeners for listening and for hanging in there with us. We're enjoying doing this. We want to produce the best show possible. So thank you for your patience, and just thank you for listening.
Well, first, thank you to Lakeithah, and thank you to Lakeitha's mom for putting her on to something awesome. And I'm so happy that Paul was able to find us. I hope that he's listening to this episode. Hi, Paul.
So you can find me online. I am the founder of Graveyard Shift Sisters, so it's www.graveyardshiftsisters.com. You can find me on Twitter at Graveyard Sister. Also, like the Facebook page if you haven't already, facebook.com/graveyardshiftsisters. Also, graveyardshiftsisters.tumblr.com is where you can get your Black Women in Horror library of photos and film info.
Okay, and you can find me at realqueenofhorror.com and on Twitter, Lovely Zena, and on Facebook, it's just facebook.com/realqueenofhorror. I post up some of the articles, well, some reviews that I do. I also post up on what horror movies I'm currently watching. So just in case if you need something to watch, you can help yourself.
And continue to send us your questions and comments at girlswillbeghouls@gmail.com. You can find Girls Will Be Ghouls on Twitter at girls, GIRLSWILB as in boy, ghouls. You can visit our site, girlswillbeghouls.wordpress.com. We are also on iTunes and Stitcher for your mobile needs. And we are proud members of the Legion Podcast Network. That is legionpodcasts.com, where you can find other great podcasts just like ours.
Okay, well, thank you guys for listening.
Good night.